Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
It's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, and is a longtime podcaster. Also, I have stage 4 prostate cancer, so during the initial stages of the COVID-19 outbreak, my doctors advised me to stay at home. But now, a little more than a year later, I'm fully vaccinated and I've rejoined society. But I'm still continuing this podcast when I'm calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I've met throughout my 30 years in this industry. Plus, this year, I'm going to be calling some people and making new friends. Oh, and I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. When Lon Kruger was hired to be Kansas State's head basketball coach back in the middle 80s, I was a senior in college. I was the sports editor of the Collegian, the student newspaper, and as you'll find out, he was the topic of my first great scoop as a journalist. And it's weird to think about now as I look back over the course of time and realize that Lon Kruger, who was such an important figure in Kansas State sports. I mean, he'd been an all-American, all-conference type basketball player in the early 70s. He was the foundation recruit of the Jack Hartman years in K-State basketball. And then he'd left to play basketball and then started his coaching career at Pittsburgh State here in the state of Kansas, and then came back to serve alongside his mentor and coach, Jack Hartman, before becoming the head coach at Texas Pan American in the early 1980s. But when he arrived at Kansas State, Lon Kruger was in his early to mid 30s. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around. And he's been a guy that I've wanted to have on the Life of Fitz since I started it up, but it just didn't happen last summer. And now he's retired from Oklahoma. He turns 69 on August 19th. And I thought, what a great time to talk to Lon Kruger, the guy who provided me my first big scoop. Now let's call Lon Kruger in Norman, Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hey, Coach, how are you?
I am good. How you doing?
Are you down in Oklahoma right now?
We are. Yep. Still in Oklahoma, and we'll be in and out of Vegas a little bit, but we'll be here in Oklahoma for a while.
Yeah, not a bad gig for your son, and not a bad gig for Dad to have to go visit him.
Absolutely. No, we love it. We love it. He's fired up about it, and we'll look forward to cheering him on.
You must have made an impression if they'd hire your offspring out there.
Well, people had good feelings about Kevin when he was there. You know, yeah. Last year was pretty good for him, and team was good, and people had good memories.
So what is retirement going to hold for Lon Kruger?
Well, most importantly, it's going to be centered around the grandkids. You know, we've got Angie's got 3 and 9, 6, and 3, and Kevin's got one that'll be 2 and another one on the way. So a lot of fun. They're great ages, and we just felt like we were missing too much of it. So we decided to make that a little bit more full time.
Yeah. I mean, the coaching is changing so fast right now. Am I right or wrong in that? It just seems like the whole landscape of how you have to go about your job is being altered very quickly.
It's changing a great deal. I think as much as it's changing today, I don't know that we'll even recognize what it looks like 3 years from now. I think the change has just started, and it's going to magnify with media eligibility and the name, image, likeness. Crazy stuff ahead.
It really is. I know you took on some, you had success with transfers. I mean, that worked for you pretty well in your years at Oklahoma. It's about to get crazy, though, isn't it? It maybe even already is crazy. And I don't know how coaches are going to keep up with this with players coming and going.
It's going to be different. It's something you have to adjust to. It's not what we know it to be 10, 15, 20 years ago, but that's the nature of anything, I guess. There's going to be changes, and you just adjust to it and make the most of it, and try to make it as good as you can.
And when you're 68, you say, "I'm going to go play with grandkids."
That's exactly right. That's the alternative.
By the way, there's a guy here in Manhattan who heard you retired at 68, and he wanted to know why you're retiring so young. That's Bill Snyder. He thinks you got another good 10 or 11 years in you.
Well, he did it that way, and he did it pretty well, so no argument there.
Which is remarkable when you stop and think about it. He was your age, basically, when he came out of retirement. It's crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy.
No, it is. It is. I mean, again, he did such a fantastic job, and everyone is better off for it, for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the start. Silver Lake, Kansas. What was life like growing up in Silver Lake, a community with which you're still, you know, pretty well bonded?
Yeah, kind of three brothers that still live in that area, and all the nephews and nieces, and it was an ideal, you know, growing up opportunity. I was the oldest of six children, and mom and dad's attitude was about whatever they can do to make lives better for their kids, and they did that. They did that. You know, we never did really have a lot of extra stuff, but we had everything we needed, and never even thought about not having something. So it was great. It was absolutely terrific.
It's a cool town, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a great place. They love their sports. They're, you know, good folks, good people, about helping each other. And yeah, it's a great place.
That sports environment had to be so formative to you as a young man, and it kind of became your life, didn't it?
It did. Man, it was. Daily agenda, you know, revolved around sports. You know, that was basically the way it was. We it was sports and family. You know, we did everything together as a family, but sports was right at the center of it. And whatever season was in session, that's what everyone in town played, and had a great time doing it.
What was Jack Hartman's recruiting pitch like?
Well, I think it was a case where he got the job a little bit late in the spring, and I think he realized he had scholarships available, and just, you know, kind of throwing them out there to see if anyone would take him up on it. So it was a pretty easy pitch for him, for sure.
That worked out well for both parties.
Well, it worked out well for us, that's for sure. We enjoyed it, had a great time, and still communicate with those teammates from those years, and a lot of very, very good memories.
You got to look back at those times when you were playing, and it was kind of a golden era of Kansas State basketball, wasn't it?
It was. You think about coming off of the Tex Winter years, and then Cotton Fitzsimmons had a couple good years. Then Coach Hartman came in, was a terrific coach, and had great success. And it was a great, great stretch there, and a lot of good times.
What was it like to play for Coach? Times are so different now. Coaches are so kind of transparent. You're just kind of out there with so much TV, social media, everything going on. But back then, it was so different. You kind of saw Coach on the sideline. That's when, as a fan or someone else, that's when you saw him. You had to go to a game and maybe a highlight here and there, but we didn't know the coaches quite like we know you guys now. What was he like?
Yeah, it was so much different from an exposure standpoint. You might have one or two games a week on TV. So you didn't really, today, everything anyone's doing is captured on camera, and you replay it a dozen times if you want to. back then, like you say, a couple games a week, you see a coach, you know, on the sidelines, all the tours around the state, not nearly the alumni stuff. I mean, not nearly like it is today, for sure. And Coach Hartman was, very, very close to the vest, very guarded, going to sway too much out of center. He's going to be what he is every day. He's going to expect a lot. He's going to work really hard in preparation. He's going to expect you to do the same as a player. And he had guys that did that.
Any chance we'll ever get him in the College Basketball Hall of Fame? Or is that just past?
I would hope so. Yeah, no. I think it's going to happen. I mean, you just can't even imagine him not being there right now. But absolutely. And I know folks are talking about it and they're working at it. And absolutely should happen.
I want to share a story with you. And I don't think you know this, even though I covered you when you were coaching at Kansas State. I was in school, but I broke at the Collegiate. I broke the story that you were coming back. Back when you could break stories, we didn't have Twitter. You could actually put something in the morning newspaper and tell people about it. It's
right.
A weird world. I feel like I'm talking about covered wagons. I called up Barb down in Texas. Well, I called your house, and then Barb answered, and I just simply said, "Barb, congratulations on coming home." And she said, "We are so excited." And that is how I tricked your wife into confirming you were coming back.
she would be embarrassed if she let something out of the bag.
That was kind of my peak moment in journalism. It's been downhill since, but I had a peak moment my junior senior year of college. It was kind of funny.
Oh, that's great.
And now nothing really can get broken. I mean, everything's just kind of leaked out and put on Twitter, and that's the world in which we live. Social media has changed so much, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's changed. By a ton, you think about what you have to deal with the players, and talking to them and trying to alert them as to how careful they have to be. Lives are changed based on what is put out there on social media, and oftentimes for the good, but oftentimes not for the good. If a young guy makes a comment or a statement that he would like to take back, and obviously he can't do it, it's out there for good, and it's a totally different world for sure.
Let's pivot back around to when you came to Kansas State. It was kind of history repeating itself. Jack Hartman went and found you, and you went and found Steve Henson down in McPherson, and you found a couple pretty good players at Moberly, one in particular. What was it like trying to put that together on when you hit your feet hit the ground in Manhattan?
Well, yeah, we were so excited to be coming back. It was home and alma mater, of course, and following coach, and really it's a pretty easy transition in a lot of ways because guys were used to working hard. They were used to doing things the right way. They were used to doing it as a team, and so it wasn't like there was a need to change the culture in all those respects. So obviously you got some really good players at that time with Coach Henson and I guess Steve Henson and Mitch Richmond and Will Scott and Mark Dobbins and all those guys that did just a terrific job.
You had to throw Dobbins in there. Now I got to deal with that massive ego. He and I go way back. When you first saw Mitch in person play, did you know he was that good?
I don't know about knowing he was that good because, I mean, it's hard to predict, project a Hall of Fame, type career. But, he was a special guy because he loved to play and he loved the game. He read about the game. He read about others. He was all in. He worked hard on his game. Wasn't necessarily a guy known for his shooting coming out of junior college, and didn't shoot the three a lot even as a junior at Kansas State, nor did anyone at that was the first year. So, but he worked on it. He worked on it, became a very good shooter, and then obviously shot the three extremely well in the NBA. So just a guy that was powerful and could punish you in the paint, but also knock down the jumper and good rebounder and good in every aspect.
That pull-up jumper with an explosion upward that was made it so hard to defend. It's kind of a lost art, isn't it? That 12, 15-foot jumper that you get off the dribble.
It is. You know, analytics today say that that mid-range jumper is not something you try to do, and so many people are buying into that. Of course, Chris Paul now in the playoffs showing how important being able to knock down that jumper is. But, yeah, Mitch would get his body on you and then explode as you're kind of reeling backwards and get a lot of separation, and he shot it very well.
It was just beautiful to watch. It really was. 1988, pretty darn good team, Pontiac, Michigan. How heartbreaking was that loss to Kansas and Pontiac?
Extremely. Very, very much so. When you think about just 3 weeks earlier, it had pretty much pounded them in Kansas City in the Big 12 tournament and Big 8 tournament at that time. And then they got on a roll, and Manning got going, and they started playing really well. But, it was very disappointing because one game away and for the Final Four, and that was a special group of guys, and would have loved to seen them have that opportunity.
My theory is if K-State wins that game, the trajectory of the two programs is much different. Am I crazy?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's hard to project when you look back on it. But, that was a big upswing for them. And obviously difficult to sit on the sidelines and watch that as a Wildcat.
I had started my professional journalism career at that point. My boss said, after you won in the Sweet 16, said, you need to go to the game. So me and a buddy drove to Pontiac, and somehow Carol Adolph, the ticket manager, got us tickets in the front row. I don't know how she did it. She said she saved tickets for students, and we were post-students, but still young. So I had a up-close view of that game. And
yep.
I've got something really important I need to ask you about, because I want to know if this is a wives' tale or actual K-State sports history. That floor in Pontiac was parquet, and the rumor was K-State was buying it until the game was lost, and then that fell through. Any truth to that?
Well, not that I'm aware of.
Oh,
I don't know. Yeah, I wish I could validate that, but that maybe the administration had something going that we weren't aware of. But, that is a good story, though. Good story, and could well have been true. I don't know.
That's one of my favorite stories. I'm keeping it.
Keep it. It sounds good. Yep.
When did you know Steve was going to be a coach? I mean, did you just sense it as soon as he started playing that he had that coach thing about him?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no doubt about that. He was a coach on the floor, great competitor, all about team results, and outwork anyone. So he had all the qualities, and loved it, and is doing a great job today.
Yeah. He was at your side for so long. It's got to be hard when he did depart. It's got to feel weird that you don't have him right there, because you guys were kind of a great coaching duo for so many years.
Oh yeah, Steve was such a big asset for any program. But he was great with the players, and very genuine in seeing their development and working with them, and that's why he's so successful today.
Indeed, and Kevin, your son, it just seemed like he was born into it, but boy, he's done a little grinding, hasn't he? He's earned what he's gotten out in Las Vegas.
He has. He finished up his college career and then played 6 or 7 years in the G League and overseas. Wanting to get that next step, and never could quite get the NBA, but he had good experiences, learned a lot. Like you say, you're kind of a grinder in that way. And then came back in Northern Arizona as an assistant coach, and did a good job there with that program, and just loves it. He loves Vegas. He loves the Rebels, and he's got a passion for being there, and I think that's a good fit at the right time.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a nice first job. You've been through it. Is coaching in Vegas a little bit different than everything else? You talk about, we mentioned social media distractions. There's a whole lot of life distractions for kids out there.
Yeah, from the outside, it seems like there would be more there. But really, when you think about on campuses anywhere, there's plenty of distractions. You know, the Vegas distractions are a little bit more obvious, or you assume they're obvious, but really the kids don't in Vegas, they don't spend much time on the strip. You know, it's expensive. There's cameras everywhere. So when they do get out of line, I think it happened one time in 7 years that we got a call from someone saying, hey, we've got one of your guys here that really shouldn't be here. And that's once in 7 years that we really, you know, thought that, you know, wow, that wouldn't happen if we weren't in Vegas. But, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on all campuses, and there's certainly distractions for them anywhere. But what appears to be the case in Vegas, I don't think didn't turn out to be that big of a deal.
That's interesting. That's funny, because I say that almost every time I'm in Vegas. Wow, that wouldn't happen if I wasn't in Vegas.
True.
When you got out of school, you tried your hand at a little pro basketball. You went back to baseball. Do you ever think, what if? I mean, you were a pretty darn good baseball player, too.
Well, you always look back and think about, you know, when you look back and see how things transpired. It could have been a lot different. You know, I was talking to someone the other day about, you know, Dad and I are sitting there in a hotel in Topeka as a senior in high school after being drafted by the Astros. And had we made a decision to go that route instead of Kansas State? That's, you know, crazy. I mean, goodness, everything would have been different. Of course, the best thing that happened to me was meeting Barb, you know, as a result of going to Kansas State. So gone the other way, that would not have happened. And, you know, life would have been a lot different for sure. But, there's a lot of those forks in the road, I guess, that you say, if I had done something different, then it would have been a whole lot different in the end.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about some of the small, what you think are, you know, smallest decisions, or just, you know, decisions between this or that turn out to be completely life-altering.
You bet.
Completely life-altering. Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Let's shift gears here. I want to talk to you a little bit about coaches versus cancer. I'm not sure if you're aware, I have stage 4 prostate cancer. So I've kind of perked my ears up a little bit more about the organization. It's really impressive work what you guys do. I want to thank you. It's really important.
Well, I appreciate that. And I hope things move forward well for you. The coaches do a great job in the country with using their platform to promote awareness, promote dollars for research. Everyone, like you know well, has been touched by cancer one way or another, whether a family member, friend, or personally. And it's a terrible disease, and making a lot of progress, but still a long way to go.
The golf tournament that you help put on every year has got to be a lot of fun, though.
It is. It's a lot of fun, and yet it's great to see the people that are there. This year we had 69 foursomes at Kansas State or at Las Vegas, and four of them were Mike Clark organizes from Kansas State, from Manhattan. So people have a great time. They play three great courses in Las Vegas. MGM does a great job, but they don't lose sight of why they're there. And people are doing it for the right reasons. This year was $1.4 million raised. And they're proud of it. It's become kind of a reunion. This was the 14th year. Next year will be the 15th year of doing it. And raised $7-8 million over that time. And it's a result of the coaches jumping in there and people wanting to contribute to a good cause.
That's incredible. When you helped start this, you probably had no idea it was going to turn into this big a deal.
We had no idea, for sure. That's putting it mildly, I guess. We had 12 foursomes the first year and really didn't know, we didn't have Coaches vs. Cancer at the focus at that time. We did it, we had Vegas, we had great golf courses, we had great weather, we needed to do something. So we put on a little event, we had 12 foursomes and raised $35,000. And the following year we got tied into Coaches vs. Cancer and it was great. And then coaches, again, more and more buy into it and look forward to being there. And it becomes a little bit of a reunion every year.
Yeah, I bet it is. And it's got to be hard. I don't know how much you're, still involved in the leadership of the organization, but it's got to be hard to decide what direction we're going because there's so many cancers. There's so many different types of things, so many battles to be fought. And you almost feel like you are excluding one type if you pick this cancer to, you know what I'm saying? It's almost political now that I'm into the cancer organizations and people kind of fight over the attention that's out there.
No, very definitely. Very definitely that's the case. Whether it be pediatric cancer or, one specific type, everyone's vying for those dollars. They need more dollars for research and need more dollars for, to gain on the disease. And it's very political, very political. We were talking last week about, one group thinking pediatric cancer is not the way to go. Another group thinking that is only the only way to go. And so, everyone's got an opinion and where those dollars go really is determined by American Cancer Society. But the folks that put up the money, always good for them to know where their money's going.
In starting up a nonprofit, which my nonprofit for prostate cancer awareness is in its infancy and of course, the pandemic kind of slowed everything down. But I've learned one thing, that even when you're out there trying to raise money or raise awareness, taking a stance against pediatric cancer, that's not one I'm going to touch. And that hits home with a lot of men. I mean, I'm sure women too, but I can't speak for women. But a lot of men are like, well, I know we need to fund this, but I'm more worried about the kids. They got a full life out of them. I'm like, well, there's no argument against that. It's a weird realm, the cancer research, cancer fundraising world.
No, that's very true. And again, you hear more and more now, people are starting to give more attention to actually the folks with cancer and doing more to make their lives better. Yeah. And maybe the lives of the families during the treatments and all that stuff, which you can't argue against that either. So, but again, everyone, has an idea as to what they think is more important, but it's important across the board for sure.
Yeah, I've not met anyone who's pro-cancer, so that's good.
That's true.
That's good. What are you going to do with your time now that you're retired? I don't imagine you're going to be building birdhouses or anything.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that looks like. Certainly, I know it'll be the grandkids will be at the center of it. We'll spend a lot more time. Our daughter and her family just moved to Puerto Rico, actually, 2 weeks ago. So
come on. You get to go to Puerto Rico or Vegas?
Puerto Rico. Absolutely. Oh, those are two stops. So we'll spend our time between those two places. But at the same time, there's got to be, some value in what you're doing. I mean, you can't just enjoy the grandkids, which we absolutely will do that. But I think, Barb's been always so good throughout her life of giving back to communities and whether it be, homeless or, domestic abuse or whatever the case might be. She's involved full speed ahead. And we'll jump in there in one direction or another. We don't know exactly what that looks like at this time.
Well, when you visit Puerto Rico, you'll see a beautiful island, beautiful place, beautiful people. But ever since the hurricane, it's a real struggle. It really is.
Yep, no doubt about that. No doubt.
Where in Puerto Rico?
Just outside San Juan. Okay. Sabanero, right near Dorado Beach. So it really is a neat area based on what Angie is saying. They love it at this point. And still, like you say, though, they've got an island, a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I've been there once and absolutely loved it. And I've regretted that I haven't been back, and I have opportunities to do so, and I need to do so because, like I said, it has its issues. There's no doubt about it, but it is a beautiful place, and the people are just wonderful. Really cool.
Yep.
I'm really jealous. I think we need to adopt children. We don't have our own kids that live in fun places like Puerto Rico and Las Vegas.
That's right.
Going back to your coaching career now, you leave K-State and you end up heading down to Florida. What all went into that decision?
Yeah, that was really hard. Never thought about at any stop about what lies ahead. Didn't have a plan to change as often as we did. Kansas State was probably unique in that that was probably the only time in the coaching career that I kind of said to myself that the losses hurt there, just more than anywhere else. Because it really felt like I was letting down, some people that felt very strongly about, fellow alums. And that's the only time that I had a little trouble sleeping, after a loss, basically Barb and I talked about it. I said, if we're going to coach for a long time, it's probably not going to be Kansas State because it's just, too hard.
Yeah,
just too personal. And I really hadn't said that too much to others, but that was the only time I really felt that way about coaching. I think everywhere else, of course, losses hurt, but still, you feel like you're doing what you can and making as much out of it as you can. But the Kansas State was a little different. Yeah, you probably wouldn't have coached as long if you stayed there, much longer. So, it was a hard decision, but one we felt like we needed to do.
Florida to Illinois. I just think it's interesting that Illinois now has had two Jack Hartman players as their head coach. I just think that's fascinating with Brad Underwood being up there.
Interesting, yeah. It's hard to imagine that, one stop would attract two Coach Hartman guys. But Illinois is Big Ten. It's a big basketball hotbed, Illinois especially, the history they've had, and basketball in the state's great, and Chicago's great, and Brad's doing a terrific job, really, really excited, had a terrific team last year, and nature the NCAA tournament, just one night, not quite there, can end it all, but they'll bounce back and they'll do well.
Illinois has got to be a little bit different than most jobs because you've got such a hotbed of recruiting in Chicago. And yet I'm trying to search for the right word. It's a difficult place to go in there and recruit and not get caught up in kind of the basketball politics of Chicago. Am I right or wrong on that?
No, it's very, very definitely the case. Unfortunately, it seemed like from an academic standpoint, you'd like to see, the hundreds of kids that are in Chicago all be ready, academically to go into a big Ten institution. And when we were there, the inner city of Chicago actually had very few people you know, playing in the Big Ten, which is really a sad commentary, you know, from an educational standpoint, because there are so many players, but not you know, academically, you know, meeting the requirements at the Big Ten institution. So so it is a fine line there, you know, as the suburbs oftentimes produce terrific players, but it is kind of sad that that there were more coming from inside of Chicago.
So we get to 2000, you leave Illinois and you go to Atlanta. I never saw you as an NBA coach. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was again when we kind of at a crossroads in our lives. We were, I guess at that time we were 48 years old, and Barb and I talked about, you know, we've been coaching all our lives, and you know, maybe, you know, maybe there's something else, you know. And even though the NBA wasn't a lot, I mean, it was basketball, but it was a lot different from college. And we didn't know at the time when we got the call about, you know, would we be interested, you know, we said, yeah, this is something different. It sounds intriguing and exciting. And we're happy we did it. You know, we didn't do it well. You know, I was naive to it. We got fired in our third year, but yeah, we learned a lot, and it was kind of humbling in a healthy way from a coaching standpoint, but yeah, good people and good relationships, and glad that we did it.
How did UNLV pop up for you?
Yeah, coming out of, you know, when we were in Atlanta, we tried to hire Don Chaney, who was an assistant coach with the Knicks in Atlanta, and he almost came down but decided not to, and he stayed in New York. And then when we got fired in Atlanta, Don had become the head coach of the Knicks. So he asked us if we'd be interested in coming up there as assistant. So we did it. And then we all got fired when Isaiah Thomas came in and fired everyone, you know, shortly after. But so we were out of it for a few months. And actually, Kevin was a freshman at Arizona State at that time, redshirting. So we went out there and just followed the, you know, his group. And then didn't know what we were going to do. And then UNLV called, and I didn't think that was, you know, probably what we wanted to do. But then Brad Rothermel, who also spent some time at Kansas State and former AD at UNLV, he called back and said, you know, think about this, because he thinks the timing is right. You know, it's been enough years since Tark, and these people want to do it, you know, the right way. And you know, so we looked at it again, and more we talked about it, we decided to do it, and really glad again that we did. We've been very fortunate that we've really enjoyed every stop. You know, really have. We've met great people and great friendships over the years, and look forward to revisiting some of those during the retirement years.
And then you get the call from Oklahoma in 2011, and it was a fascinating hire for me. I loved it, of course, but I'm like, I'm not sure how long Lon will be there to do that. And it ended up being your longest stop of your career. You were there, what, 10, 11 years? I mean, it's incredible to think about. What connected with Oklahoma so much?
Yeah, we had been at UNLV 7 years and thought we'd retire there. I mean, we loved living in Vegas. We loved the people there. There's great energy. When you live there, it's not all about the strip. You know, there's great community around. The people there are very charitable. They very caring for each other, and we loved it. You know, and we just built a house there, and when Joe Castiglione called, you know, we really didn't think we would do it. Thanks, and we said that a couple times. And finally, you know, we just decided, you know, it's Big 12. It's back near family. It's back in the Midwest. We just said, okay, you know, we'll do it. And, you know, like you say, it turned into 10 years, and again, great people, very much like Kansas State people, very very Midwestern, great folks, good people, care about each other, and we've had really, really enjoyable 10 years.
It's fascinating, the ties between Kansas State and Oklahoma. I mean, Bob Stoops was there for so long after coaching at Kansas State. Kenny Mossman was there for so long after working at Kansas State. It's really I wouldn't put the two schools together, but as it turns out, there is a lot of commonality between the two, isn't there?
There really is. And then people, the Eric Barnhart, you know, Matt Mossman, you mentioned, you know, Matt McMillan. Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of folks that, with Kansas State ties, at Oklahoma for sure.
Have you gone to Matt McMillan's bar? Matt McMillan running a bar doesn't seem like a good combination. It seems like a fun combination, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know that it lasted as long as he expected it to. He was open. I think they've moved a different direction now.
Okay.
But Matt, yeah, Matt's great. And Bob Stoops has been great. The impact that he had on the program and success that he had, really second to none, and fantastic family.
Are you going to stay? Do you actually live in Norman?
We do. Yeah, we do. Live on the outskirts. Got some land and some horses. And,
oh, nice.
Barb grew up with horses, so she loves it. And I love it. I don't know anything about them, but I love being around them every day. It's great. And we'll eventually, end up in Vegas, but no rush to it. Got some things to settle up here and in Vegas as well. So, it's good times, and we enjoy each day.
There's nothing wrong with land with horses as a home base.
That is very true. It's kind of a peaceful area and quiet. We got the turkeys in the backyard and nice. Deer occasionally. It's a fun time.
Did you just know it was time to retire, or did you wrestle with it?
Yeah, we wrestled with it. We thought we'd go another, we knew at some point it's going to end. Then the grandkids are getting older. We started talking about, gosh, I'd like to get down there more often. When Lou Hill, one of our longtime assistant coaches, was 5 years as a coach at Rio Grande Valley, passed away in February, and that got our attention, big time. And so we kind of started thinking about it more, talking about it more. And then really when Kev got the job in Vegas, we said, well, everything seems to be aligning that now's a good time to do it. So let's go and move on to whatever's next.
You sound like you're at peace with it.
Oh yeah, for sure. You feel, fortunately our staff all landed on their feet. I mean, you're always thinking about that as well. And the players, with Porter Mosier coming in, they've got a great guy, coming in to coach them. So that's great. And so everything turned out as well as it could have.
Some similarities in style between you and Porter?
I think so. I don't know about similarities, but I know he's very concerned about the culture. He's very concerned about, the total player, not just the basketball player. He coaches them. He coaches them great. He's had great success at Loyola, and great energy. And I know he's fired up about being here.
I was a little surprised he finally pulled the trigger, but it's cool to have him in the Big 12. I think it'll be an interesting brand of basketball to mix into the conference. I know, K-State lost another Elite Eight game to him recently in the NCAA tournament. So that'll be very fascinating to have him around. And I love his style of basketball.
Yeah, he's done a great job. He's had really good players. They guard you. They guard you like crazy, and they move the ball. They value possessions, play the game the right way.
Now, there's a lot of great coaches in this conference. It's really incredible to watch.
Yeah, very good teams. I mean, it's and coaches. If you don't play well, you're not going to win. I mean, sometimes when you do play well, you don't win. But yeah, the balance and the strength of the league is tough to win games. It really is. And teams are well prepared, and teams are very good. So it'll be fun to watch that.
One final thing for you before I let you go. Can you explain why you had so many problems winning in Bramlage Coliseum? That was just so strange.
Yeah, well, number one, I mean, Bruce does a great job. I mean, their teams are good. They guard you like crazy. It's a tough place to win. Fans were always great. We generally didn't play as well as we'd like to, but I think a lot of that was because of, the Wildcats. They guard you well and kind of get in your head a little bit, and we didn't handle that well. So I think we won once if I'm not mistaken, out of the 10 years. So it's not a very good record.
And Bramlage is great, but it's Noah Hearn, is it? I miss it. I miss it every time I go to a basketball game. I think about the sounds and the smells and the just how unique a Hearn Field House was.
Yeah, I think anyone that has hit history with Ahern, you know, probably a little biased, you know, like you and I are. But yeah, that was a special place and special crowds and those atmosphere. You know, game night were hard to beat.
Yep, indeed. Coach, I appreciate it very much. And again, thank you so much for the work you do with Coaches versus Cancer. It's a really neat thing that has really grown into something huge and powerful.
Well, I appreciate that. We'll be thinking about you, and good luck with your battle.
Okay. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
This was an interesting interview for me because a lot of the people I've had on this podcast have been people with whom I've maintained relationships or I previously had a kind of casual conversational relationship with. Lon was the first guy that really he was only ever been the subject of interviews. I've only interacted with him as a reporter, not as a guy who is a reporter. Because I've had relationships with many people in the coaching and playing profession where we have off-topic conversations and kind of get to know each other. It's never really happened with Lon Kruger and I. So this was kind of a more formal interview than what typically the Life of Fitz is, but I really appreciate Coach Kruger giving me the time. He's got some time on his hands and kind of opening up about his career and he and Barb's lives now as grandparents. Well, that's it for this edition of The Life of Fitz. And, of course, Coaches versus Cancer plays a role in helping with research of prostate cancer and helping out men who might be battling prostate cancer. This is your reminder, guys, if you're 45 or older, get to your doctor to get that PSA scored. Get a baseline score. Get the score you can compare all future scores to, just in case. Knowing my PSA score, just by chance, probably saved my life. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you real soon.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.